No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site for USA Today's NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, we've got some stuff to talk about. We're not going to dwell a whole bunch on a whole gap. By the time people are listening to us, the Cardinals might have already played this week, but how is everything in your end for Cardinals land these days?
You know, it's not bad. It's been enjoyable. It was a different type of game for the Arizona Cardinals. And even if it was not as aesthetically pleasing as the past, it was still, you know, fun to watch. And obviously the good guys came out on top.
And so, yeah, the Cardinals come away with a 20-10 victory over the San Francisco 49ers over the weekend. It wasn't the prettiest win, and it wasn't the most dominating win, but it was exactly what they needed. They get the win. They even the record of 4-4, and now they take on a short week. We're recording on a Tuesday night. The show will post probably Wednesday afternoon, so we'll be about 24 hours away from the game starting against the Seattle Seahawks at home on Thursday Night Football. So what we're going to talk about in this show is we're not going to do exactly what we've done in previous shows, simply because by the time some people are going to be listening to it, the game is actually going to be all already over. So we're going to talk about some of the big things the biggest takeaways out of the game against the 49ers, particularly talk about Adrian Peterson. We have to talk about Drew Stanton, Phil Dawson, and then the defensive performance that they had. And then instead of so much previewing the game for the Seahawks, we're going to play a little what if. So what will the season look like if they beat the Seahawks? What does that mean moving forward? If they lose the Seahawks, which I think most people are probably believe will be the case, how does that affect the team moving forward? And then from there, we'll probably wrap it up until next week. So let's go ahead and get started with this show. I wanted to let you know, of course, beforehand, I want to tell you about friends of the show from Harry's.com. You probably, if you shave like me, Seth doesn't shave a whole lot. He's got a big old beard going, so he's probably not going to worry about this. But if you shave on a regular basis, you know the dilemma that we run into. You basically either have the electric razor, you can go with the cheap disposable razor, but it doesn't give you a very good shave at all. And you've got the super expensive blades that are overpriced. But Harry's.com gives you a different option where you can get high quality, great blades at a fraction of the cost. I made the switch myself. My stuff came in the mail. It's delivered directly to your door, and you never run out because you can kind of set when the blades are delivered. I got mine. I've been using an electric razor for years because I didn't, you know, between the electric shave and then the cheap disposable blades, about the same thing. And I didn't want to pay the price for the other stuff. So I made the switch. It's a great, great shave, nice and close. The missus likes it as well. And well, basically I want you guys to try it out. So you go to harrys.com/cred and you get the trial shave set for free when you sign up. And all you got to pay for is shipping. It's a great shave at a fair price. 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. You can claim your free trial offer. Go ahead and head on over to harrys.com/cred. It's a $13 value free when you sign up. You just cover the shipping. So for $3, you get a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineer blades with the lubricating strip and trimmer blade. You get the rich lathering shave gel and a travel blade cover. All that for $3 to cover the shipping. Get your free trial. Go to harrys.com/cred. That's harrys.com/cred. We're going to get started, Seth. Let's talk about the win over the San Francisco 49ers. And number one, the story has to be Adrian Peterson. Did you see that coming? I mean, Harold Goodwin talked about feeding the beast. Did you see 37 carries coming?
No, and I think it's crazy to think that in Adrian Peterson's you know, Hall of Fame career, and it is Hall of Fame, that he has never carried the ball 37 times. So to see him do it at 32 for the first time is literally insane. To see him not just do it, but do it well. And the thing is this, and a lot of times when you see big games from players, like 37 carries for, what was it, 159 yards.
159 yards.
Whatever it is, you know, you look at that and you say, oh man, how many big runs did he have? Peterson didn't really have any. His long on the day was 25 yards. And that happened at the end of the game, you know, when they were backed up on their goal line, and he made a nice move and got them out. And then I think he promptly fumbled right after. That was the series before. Then they took him out and put Kerwin Williams in. So, it was one of those things where there was no big run. There was no, 65-yard run, and then the other 36 carries resulted in 90 yards or anything like that. You know, it was just a literal knockdown, drag out. Every inch was a fight type of game, and it was fantastic to watch. It's something that I honestly, like, I've thought back as much as I could, and we've never really seen that with the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm okay with that because it's something different. Now, it would be even better if they had a defense like the Jacksonville Jaguars, but you know what? You can't complain because they did what they needed to do, and it was very successful.
And it wasn't, that's the thing what we see often with running backs who put up big numbers like that, is you'll see one like gigantic play. It wasn't a bunch of 1 and 2 yarders completely, but he didn't have the 54 yarder that he ripped off, or the 27 yarder, but he did have a few ones. He went for 13, he went for 16, he went for 18, he went for 25. And so there were some chunk plays, there were some explosive plays for Peterson, but mainly it was methodical and it was physical and it was great to see. And we're starting to see the evolution of the Cardinals offense change before our eyes, because Bruce Arians has a running back. How can you not give him the ball, especially considering you've got your backup quarterback in there? The receiver play was, the skill players were not stepping up to help Drew Stanton in his throws. And you were going to get up against a San Francisco team that just hasn't been particularly great. I mean, their yards per carry, their yards per attempt defensively was 3.9, so that's pretty okay. But, they were giving them 130 yards a game. So you know that, hey, you get a lead, and then you run the ball, and then you run the ball some more, and then you run the ball some more. We have not seen that concerted an effort to run the ball since the 2013 win in Seattle, when it was Stephon Taylor that was getting the gobs of carries. And Rashard Mendenhall. It was really refreshing to see them kind of go that route and to commit to that to move forward, even though play number one in the game ended up being a 52-yard bomb. The question, though, is this sustainable, especially coming up? Would it have been wiser to limit him a little bit for the Thursday night game? And my thoughts on that are, it came after a bye. There's a mini bye coming up. You know what a physical specimen that Peterson is. So maybe he might feel some effects, but this is you're going to have Peterson for the second half of the season. You probably won't have him again after this year. So considering the physicality, considering the skill, considering he wants the ball, you give him the ball, you feed him, you get all the mileage you can get out of this guy.
Well, and the other thing is this, we always say, and you're probably right, he probably won't be here next year, but I still maintain the idea of having Peterson and Johnson in the backfield. You know, obviously Peterson's not going to get 37 carries. He probably won't even get 30 carries, but, you know, you can get him 18 to 20 carries a game. You can get David Johnson 25 touches a game, and you can be the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, you really can. And most people will say, well, that's dumb, but you look at the Jaguars this year, their weakness coming into the season, the question mark was Blake Bortles. And they've done everything they can in their power to negate Blake Bortles' impact on their game. And the Cardinals can do the same thing. And think of it this way. If Carson Palmer comes back, they don't even have to make that concerted of an effort. They can just have this dynamic 1-2 punch in the backfield to go along with, yes, a very old quarterback, but a quarterback that can still make throws at opportune times. On the flip side, if they are, you know, if Palmer decides to retire and step away, you know, and they go to the Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert rookie quarterback battle, that's probably where you want to build your team, as close to that, you know, Jacksonville Jaguars type of team, that Denver Broncos Super Bowl winning type of team, where you just can do as much as you can do to not make the quarterback have to win games for you. And that's what I think that backfield can do. You're probably right. It probably won't happen, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to explore if you can. Now, the flip side is maybe Adrian Peterson won't want that, and so that'll be the tough part.
That's true. Now, what would be really interesting to see if Bruce Arians would change philosophically. I mean, his offensive system, his offensive style, his philosophy is this tried and true. The chunk plays, the passing game, the work on the passing game is great. But what if you – that's a good thing. So if they had Adrian Peterson and David Johnson, he could build an offense around the two of them, and making the run the central part of that. And that – just imagining just having the 1-2 punch of Peterson and Johnson – You could get both players. Ideally, you could get them both 15 carries. It would take some work, but you'd have to get them both 15 carries. You'd get David Johnson 5 to 10 more opportunities in the passing game, and then you also sort of limit the receiver problem that the Cardinals have potentially moving forward, in terms of if Fitz retires, they really don't have any go-to guys in the passing game. You can limit that by, you know, you've paid Jermaine Gresham a lot of money, so you can throw him a few passes here and there. You've got David Johnson, between David Johnson and Adrian Peterson, you're going to run the entire offense through them. And so you don't need big name, powerful receivers. You could go the Seattle Seahawks way. It's not that Doug Baldwin has become a very, very, very good receiver, but you can turn guys into productive players without having to be dynamic receivers and still have a dynamic offense around whoever that is, whether that's Carson Palmer, Blaine Gabbert, you know, Sam Darnold, or Mason, whoever that guy is. But yeah, that would be really funny. But for me, I mean, I'm not even thinking about next year. But assuming that maybe he's not here, give him all the carries, because that's what he wants. He didn't play hardly any football last year. He was limited the first part of the year this year. So he wants the ball. Give him the ball, and as long as he's being productive, you ride that Hall of Famer until he can't – you ride that horse into the ground. And knowing what we know about him, that horse isn't going to run into the ground because he's a super horse.
And you're right. That's what you have to do at this point. I mean, they have to keep, you know, feeding him. They have to keep, like you said, just ride him until the wheels fall off. And that's the thing, is it's kind of like Palmer, that at 32 for a running back, with the mileage he has on him, it could be next week, or they could get you know, they could get 11 great games out of Peterson, and, you know, and obviously it's not going to be 11, but they could get, you know, 11 productive games out of Peterson. He could be a guy that runs for 800 yards in 11 games and makes a difference for this team. And, you know, I don't think this is a playoff team still, but you and I both said last week, we both think this is a team that's going to be right around 500, and you know, in game one of this 9-game season basically that they had left, that was the way for them to get to 500 again, and now we'll see if they can get above it.
And then that's one of the things we're going to talk about. So all it takes is a couple of stealing a couple of wins, and then they're going to be in the mix. So let's come back on the next segment of Rise Up C-Red and talk about Drew Stanton, Phil Dawson, and the defense. So that's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on Rise Up C-Red. We got the first look at Drew Stanton as a starter again this year. He's won. He's got a great winning streak going. He's now 7-3 as a starter for the Cardinals, three of those games against the San Francisco 49ers. And if you look at the blueprint, the win this last weekend was almost identical to the win that they had in San Francisco a year ago, only Stanton was more effective than he was. He threw a pair of touchdown passes. David Johnson ran for 157 yards last year. This year, Stanton throws another couple of touchdown passes, and Adrian Peterson goes for 159 yards rushing. But, I mean, we got to see what, you know, people just calm down. We don't want to see Blaine Gabbert yet. Let's see what Drew can do. And Drew Stanton showed exactly what we, at least what I expected, a capable manager of the offense who's not going to beat. And he did throw the interception. I don't say, you know, he doesn't throw a lot of picks when he's in a starting role. In fact, one of the things that I noted in the game entering the game was the fact that if you look at his 2014 numbers, I mean, what was it? 8 touchdowns, 5 interceptions that year. It was one of the 5 lowest interception percentage, 2.1%, one of the 5 lowest interception percentages in Cardinals history. In Cardinals history, he protected the ball, and he's capable, he's efficient, and he's effective. And if you have other parts of the game that are working for you, you get that. That's what you need. And, you know, can we continue to see what that happens moving forward? And can he stay healthy? That's a completely different story. But at least in game one, he rewarded Bruce Arians for the loyalty that we've seen. And Cardinals fans can sit back and relax and quit calling for Blaine Gabbert because it's not time yet.
No, it's not time. And you know, you and I have talked about this. We both said that Stanton was the right call. And the only reason I've said that I would prefer Gabbert is because I know what I'm getting out of Stanton. And we got exactly what we knew we were going to get out of him. 50% passer, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception on a bad throw on his part. I know Arians took the blame, which is so funny that he
protects his quarterbacks so much
that he does that. But yeah, you know, Arians took the blame on that. I got a little greedy. No, that's your call. That's what you do on offense. I mean, you know, no risk it, no biscuit. And you did the same thing.
And you know, Drew put on the wrong shoulder. That's all he did.
Jermaine Gresham was open. I mean, he wasn't open, but that, you know, that window was open. And so, yeah, exactly. He threw it back shoulder. It should have been thrown middle, or, you know, it should have been thrown inside. And he makes that throw. He probably has 3 touchdowns on the day. But that's why he's Drew Stanton. That's why he's a backup quarterback and, you know, a fill-in starter. And so that's the whole thing is – I have no problem with that because I know that he's going to do enough to beat teams like San Francisco. He's probably going to do enough to beat a team like Houston in you know, however many days we're away now, 12 days or whatever. But can he do enough to beat the Seahawks? And I don't – I mean, in his career starts, he never has. I know in – 2015, he didn't start that game, but he finished that game and he didn't look good at all. And when you look at that, I trust me, I don't think Blaine Gabbert can do it either, but at least we can find out something new for the Cardinals as opposed to what we already know on Stanton. All that being said, like I said, he's the right call. Like, he's the guy that's going to keep you around 500 the whole time. The whole idea was you either succeed with Gabbert or fail spectacularly, and then you know what you have in this young guy, and moving forward into 2018 if you know if Palmer decides to step away.
And you know, and looking across the league, we've seen a lot of other teams whose starting quarterback has gone. I am personally very, very glad that the Cardinals have a Drew Stanton, because so many other teams have just, I know Minnesota's done all right with Case Keenum. He's I'd say he's kind of the sort of Drew Stanton in this same situation. But you look at Tom Savage and you look at Brett Hundley, who are in short, unproven young players, as opposed to having a career backup who's got a few starts under his belt. Not spectacular, but you know, you look at what the Cardinal situation is, losing Carson Palmer, you know that they're going to be, if the other parts of the game if it are working the way they should, they're going to be competitive with Stanton there. They're not going to become an abomination. Green Bay has become unwatchable with Brett Hundley, because Aaron Rodgers is just simply that good. And Peyton Manning in Indy, when you lose him, the Colts are just terrible.
There's that old situation with the
Patriots, when somehow magically with Jimmy Garoppolo or Jacoby Brissett, they still win games. But
right. Well, and I don't know how many of you, you know, remember that old Tom Moore quote, but when you look at it, that old Tom Moore quote for when he was the quarterback's coach for the Colts, and the question was, you know, why does 18 Peyton Manning take all the practice snaps? And he goes, because we don't practice, you know, effed. And that's the quote. Like, you don't practice the worst case. So all these people that get up in arms about, oh, I can't believe this guy is getting a chance, and this, there really is something to the idea of familiarity within an offense. And Drew Stanton has been with Bruce Arians for now, I think, is this year seven or is this,
this
year,
is year six?
Six.
It's year, yes. Six from 2012.
So since he was, yeah, with the Colts until now. And I'm actually answering a question from the SB Nation site, Phil Goals, about this. And that was the question, is, you know, how different is the offense? It's not. It's just the offense is different because it's not as efficient. It's not as effective. You know, instead of getting 65% completion rate, you're getting 50% completion rate. But you're going to see the same place. There's still going to be the, yep, shots down the field. You're still going to see the flood routes asking, you know, Stanton to hit those 15-yard out windows. That's the Bruce Arians offense. That's what he wants. So that's what he's going to continue to call. So when people get these ideas or you know, oh, I can't believe they're going with Drew Stanton when a guy like Colin Kaepernick is out there. Well, I've said this all along. Whether or not Colin Kaepernick is out there doesn't matter, because there's literally no chance he would play over Drew Stanton. And it has nothing to do with whether or not you think Kaepernick or is better than Stanton, because Bruce Arians doesn't care. He's not going to play somebody that he doesn't trust, and that he can't run his offense with, and that he doesn't trust. And he doesn't trust, well, anybody really, let's be honest, but you know, he doesn't trust a guy like Kaepernick when he's had Stanton in there for 6 years and he knows what he's going to get from him.
And it makes sense too. I mean, with the type of offense they run, you need him to be able to make calls and checks at the line of scrimmage. I mean, you look back to Ryan Lindley. Ryan Lindley, as bad as he was
awful. I mean, he was awful, but yeah, he knew the offense.
He knew the things he wouldn't be in the Arians offense is so critically important that a quarterback know where to make his checks and know where to call protection so that they don't get him killed. And Ryan Lindley was able to do that. So he never got killed. He just didn't know how to, he couldn't put the football where it needed to go. Because here's for example, 2012, he obviously impressed Ken Wisenhunt in practice. What he did in practice impressed him. That's what gave him the job over John Skelton. Ryan Lindley was the one quarterback they retained after they changed regimes for an entire year. Why? Because they saw something in him, whatever it was, in practice and in the classroom that made him valuable. And then after Carson Palmer got hurt in 2014, they still brought him back and even started him all the way into the playoffs instead of something else. So there is something to – you need to know the offense. And in which case in point, that's why Jimmy Garoppolo didn't play against the Cardinals. You put him in a new offense. He doesn't know the terminology. He doesn't know the protections against behind an offensive line that's suspect. Imagine what could have happened to Jimmy Garoppolo and the what they gave up for him and with the potential, the money they're going to have to pay him. And he took the beating that the Cardinals gave him, that gave C.J. Beathard. That could have been disastrous.
Right, and that was just a throw him to the wolves type thing. Like, no coach will ever admit this, but they didn't expect to win that game. They didn't. I won't say they didn't care, but they basically said, you know,
if we're going to win, we've got CJ, so right. We'll do our best with him.
And so they said, we're not going to win this game. We're not going to put Garoppolo in a position to be injured. He's already been injured once in his career from, you know, getting hit. So, okay, let's put Beathard in there. He got the crap kicked out of him. I would wager money that outcome is closer or, you know, maybe even completely different if Garoppolo plays, even on a short week, because he's that much better than Beathard. But there's also something to that, you know, of what you're saying. Don't put a kid in a position to completely bomb, to completely fail. And, you know, we saw the Cardinals do that with Logan Thomas, and then it ended up being, you know, obviously more than that. And so we've kind of seen that with Blaine Gabbert this year. There was always this question of, oh, could the Cardinals cut Stanton with how good Blaine Gabbert was playing? And Jess and I, from literally the time they signed him until after every game where Blaine Gabbert outperformed, I'm using air quotes, outperformed Drew Stanton in preseason, it was never going to happen. Never. Like, it was it wasn't even on the table of going to happen, because Bruce Arians refuses to allow it to happen. So that's why they're with Stanton now, and that's why they'll continue to ride Stanton until either the play on the field deteriorates to the point of Green Bay or Houston levels, where they're just so bad offensively that it looks like complete ineptitude, or until Stanton gets hurt,
which very well could happen. Until then, we'll see what happens with this week, because the one thing that we haven't seen Stanton do is, you know, play very well against great defenses. Phil Dawson, a reason for concern, missed another field goal. Yes, it was a low snap. He's now missed 6 field goals on the season, and it's reached the points of really almost hilarity, of ridiculousness, has it not? Because it's absurd that he has missed as many kicks as he has. It's absurd that the Cardinals have paid him as much money to come in to be better than Catanzaro and have him to not be better than Catanzaro. And to come to think of it, what people forget about last year, yes, Catanzaro missed 2 important kicks. They basically lost 2, maybe 3 games because of him. But he also won them 2 games.
Right, exactly.
he kicked the game winner against San Francisco. He kicked the game winner in Seattle. You know, he missed the game winner against Seattle before. He missed the game winner against New England. And then in that Miami game, it wasn't a direct outcome, but, you know, a couple of missed field goals, a blocked extra point that was returned for the 2 points, and you have yourself essentially the difference in the game. Dawson hasn't done anything to hurt them so far, but he's been a momentum killer because it's always his first field goal that he misses.
It is, and that's, you know, I wrote about it in kind of the game recap, is that was the eerie feeling when he missed that field goal, was holy crap, here we go again. Because it was one of those things kind of like London where they started out, you're like, okay, they got in a, you know, they had a nice drive. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't great, but they had a nice drive. They got in a field goal range. And we're not talking 50-plus yard field goals. I mean, we're talking 35, 36, 38 yard field goals. And he's missing. And so then you go, then you look at it and you go, man, we're going to have to score touchdowns every time or we're not going to score. And that I get that every team, every time they take the field, every offense, every time they take the field is going, we're going to score a touchdown. That's fine. But the reality is that doesn't happen. It's not going to happen in the NFL. So you have to have a reliable kicker that says, okay, we're at the, you know, we'll call it 38. We'll call it the 38. Okay. So we're 55 yards and in at this point. We feel good. And the Cardinals haven't had that now for 2 years. And the fact that, and I tweeted this right after the miss, and I said, every miss at this point is just on Kyman Arians because they're allowing it to continue. And I knew they weren't going to cut him coming out of this week because they're on a short week. So they wouldn't have the time. But I am willing to bet, unless he is just completely bang on rock solid, that come Saturday they'll be working out kickers. Doesn't mean they're going to cut him, but they're going to be working out some kickers on Saturday.
And they should be. And we talked about it. With the message of this team being you've got to be good, you've got to be smart, they need to do something with him. And it's, you know, Dawson's misses this year were supposed to, because he looks so good in the preseason, looks so good in training camp. When he misses, it's supposed to feel like, oh, that was weird. That's the very first miss of the year. You're like, oh, that's weird. He's supposed to make those. Because every once in a while you have them. And I mean, kickers miss them sometimes. That's fine. But you can't be 6-9 in 8 games. And it can't be missing a field goal every single game that you're in. And it can't be when you get in the red zone. You know, 45 and beyond, those are toss-ups. They really are. But once you get to the red zone, so once you're in the 38, once you're in the 38 yards and less range, that's your offense is getting in the red zone, those have to be automatic. Every single time, because you get in the red zone and you come away scoreless, that is a momentum killer for the offense.
It's defeating. It really is. I mean, you get to the point where you go, does it even matter? Like, we have to, if we don't score, we're not, you know, it's not going to be pretty. And so now all of a sudden, yeah, it's just one of those things where it's unfortunate that that's where we're at with one of the highest paid kickers in the NFL.
Yeah. Well, and that brings us to the next point. The Cardinals defense, we want to talk about the Cardinals defense, their performance, which really changed things. Because after the Dawson miss, what do? Matthew makes a play. He strips the ball. They get it down inside the 10-yard line, and they score the touchdown. You know, they didn't give themselves the chance to have the letdown that they had in London after the miss. The defense made a play. The defense stepped up. Now, the defense wasn't spectacular, but the defense was good. They held Carlos Hyde in check. They just completely battered C.J. Beathard to the tune of 16 hits and 5 sacks. And more impressively so, that it wasn't just the Chandler Jones show. In fact, he got garbage time sack, and it took until the last 2 minutes of the game for him to get his one sack. You know, entering that game, the Cardinals defense, and they only had 5 sacks from guys other than Chandler Jones. On Sunday, they got 4 sacks from guys other than Chandler Jones, which was very positive in it. And you got, you know, Hassan Reddick and Olsen Pierre sharing a sack. You got Rodney Gunter picking up a sack. You had, I can't remember who the other guys were that got sacks now. Corey Peters got one.
Corey Peters got one. obviously Chandler Jones got the late one.
Yeah.
You said Pierre, and then I believe it was
Reddick.
Reddick shared one with was it Pierre that he shared one with? And then Carlos Dansby got one on a blitz. So
that's it. That's it. Yeah, it was Olsen, Pierre, and Reddick. So and but what we saw was the defense playing more like the defense that we've all expected this year. The talent is there. The execution was mostly there. But it was promising. They forced a turnover. They got an interstate. So they got two turnovers. They got five sacks. They hit them a lot. They actually got their hands on a lot of footballs in the passing game, which was positive to see. They, in fact, according to the stat sheet, they had eight balls that were tipped that they got their hands on. A little bit from everyone. You got Dansby a couple times, Tremont Williams twice, Tyvon Branch, Olsen Pierre got one, Kareem Martin got one, Patrick Peterson got one. So they were finally looking dynamic defensively, even though they had some lapses and they gave up some yards. Ultimately, San Francisco wasn't – in fact, they went through a stretch where they – didn't they were still converting on third down. Overall, they only gave up 6 of 17, so 35% on third down. They gave up 4.5 yards per rush attempt, but they were ahead, so they didn't have to do that. And so it was a positive. I mean, it was exactly what we wanted to see, and it was kind of the kind of performance that could be a stepping stone in the right direction, because guess what? The defense is going to have to be lights out this week. They're going to have to be great against Seattle.
It will be, and they'll have to be lights out in terms of not allowing big plays. We know that they are going to give up yards. They just are. I mean, they gave up over 300 yards to C.J. Beathard. They just have to maintain in the red zone. They can't allow Russell Wilson to beat them with his legs. You know, obviously – they can't. If he beats you with your arm or with his arm, then that's on the secondary. But you can't allow him to beat you with his legs, especially as they get down near the red zone. And they have to put the game on Blair Walsh, who has struggled just as mightily as Phil Dawson this year. I mean, they literally lost that game because Walsh couldn't kick a field goal. So
three of them.
Yeah. So when you look at it, yeah, they have to play. They have to play probably their best defensive game of the season. The issue becomes, do you trust them to get stops in the red zone? Because we know that this defense is not built right now to stop teams from 25 to 20. The question just, you know, in their losses, they haven't been able to stop teams from scoring once they get inside the red zone. In their wins, they are. And if you look at every win, you know, they've still been giving up yardage. They still gave up yardage to the 49ers in the first game. They gave up yardage to the Colts in that game. They gave up drives to to the Buccaneers. I mean, they got thrashed by the Buccaneers in the second half. And then obviously against Beathard, they gave up, you know, over 300 yards of offense against a bad 49ers offense. So the question always will be with them, can they stop the other team from scoring? Because right now it just doesn't look like they're going to stop them from moving the ball.
And what at least for now, which could potentially be very helpful, is the fact that just Seattle just doesn't run the ball well. So they're very one-dimensional, and which could allow the Cardinals to focus more on their pass defense. And if they're getting pressure, and also, you know, Seattle, another team with a suspect offensive line, the Cardinals defensive front should be able to disrupt things. And we know that they still can put up points because they put up the 40 plus. I mean, that shootout between Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson was a thing of beauty. And I, you know, I hate watching the Seahawks, but it was just beautiful, wonderful football against two very good defenses who were just getting picked apart by some this was making big plays. The Cardinals should be physical enough up front to disrupt the Seahawks enough so that there shouldn't be a lot of points on the board. And if that is the case, then the Cardinals have a chance, but they've got to be physical up front, and they've got to, if they're going to let anything happen, it's just nickel and dime, because the Seahawks, I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain the nickel and dime. You take Patrick Peterson, have him take a pair of Doug Baldwin, and then you hope that the down the field plays, the magic, that fourth quarter magic that seems to happen with the Seahawks can be mitigated.
Well, and I think, you know, a guy like Paul Richardson's had a big season so far for them. You know, he only had 41 yards, but he's put up games, you know, he's scored four touchdowns on the season. In that, like you said, in that shootout against Houston, he had six catches for over 100 yards and two touchdowns. Against the Giants the week before, he only had two catches, but 61 yards and one touchdown. He's basically their John Brown from a couple years ago. Like, he's on pace for just under 1,000 yards and eight touchdowns. That's what he's going to do. He's going to score touchdowns, and he's going to gain about 20 yards per reception. So when you look at it, it's almost, the question becomes, do you let Doug Baldwin nickel and dime you down the field and make sure that Patrick Peterson takes Richardson and they don't get anything big over the top, or, you know, what are your options? So that'll be what's interesting to watch here. When you look at it overall, this game comes down to what is essentially a battle of, can the Cardinals dictate pace of the game? Because I do have a strong feeling that the Seahawks are going to continue to struggle running the football. So the question becomes, who can, in the same vein, I don't think we're going to see 37 carries for 160 yards from Adrian Peterson this week. So who can dictate? But
25 for 125.
But even if you get 25 for 100 and you're averaging 4 yards a carry and you're getting those plays and you're continuing to chew clock and you're taking and you're forcing Russell Wilson to have some magic, because he's going to. That's just that he's that good of a quarterback. He's going to make plays for them. So you have to find a way to consistently take time off the clock and put Seattle in position where they have to go 75, 80, 85, 90 yards every possession. This has to be a game of the Cardinals winning the field position battle, and they have to win the turnover battle. They cannot have Drew Stanton throwing interceptions. They can't have Adrian Peterson fumbling the ball, which is something he's struggled with in his entire career. It's just, it is. It's probably the biggest knock on him as a player is his tendency to fumble. And it's usually because he's trying to fight for extra yardage instead of going down. So when you consider all that, when you look at all that, the question becomes, you know, what do you get from this game? I can say that I think the Cardinals are going to be in this game. I don't think it's going to be a Thursday night embarrassing blowout for the Cardinals. I really don't. The question I just have is, can they get in enough stops defensively?
And with that, we'll come back. We're going to talk about some scenario. We're not going to talk about what's going to happen during the game. I want to talk more about the what if. So that's coming up next on the last part of Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. Let's talk about the what ifs. Both of us, what's going to happen in the game? Probably by the time you're listening to this, the game will already happen. That's coming up just in a couple of days. So let's talk about what could happen with this. Well, moving forward, with a win or with a loss. And let's go with the more realistic look. So if the Cardinals lose, which I think most people believe will happen, I don't think much changes in terms of what we expect to see from the Cardinals. And if you look at the schedule moving forward, they would just continue the pattern of winning one and losing one. Only they're never getting above 500. So they lose to Seattle. They're 4-5. They head to to Houston to play the Texans after the mini bye against, you know, Tom Savage and company. I think that's a game they can win. Texans don't look good right now. They kind of look like yuck is kind of how things look right now. And then after that, it's just a matter of are they going to alternate after that? Because, you know, can they beat the Jaguars to get above 500? The Rams, that's a tough game. Titans, it's a tough game. Redskins, it's a tough game. The Giants, okay, that's probably a win. And then the end of the season in Seattle. So all along, if the Cardinals lose this game, I'm being completely realistic. I still think this is a 7-9 win team overall. Probably seven or eight wins, just right there, right in the middle, if they lose this game. What do you say? Do you see that? Do you think going a little bit differently, or even, I say most optimistically, if they lose this game, nine wins, that's the max that they can get.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You look at it, Houston's obviously going to be an interesting game now with Tom Savage at quarterback. You have, of course, you still have a home game against Jacksonville. You have a home game against Tennessee, and they almost lost the Ravens, and then the Ravens don't look like a good football team right now. So when you look at it, there's probably another 3 to 5 wins out there. And that's what, you know, we've said that for the last couple of weeks. We didn't expect this to be a 3-win team. We don't expect this to be a 4-win team. I still don't expect this to be a 5-win team. So the question becomes, how many wins can they string together? Unfortunately, I don't think either of us think it's going to start this week. But I do think when you have that Houston game and then that Jacksonville game, you could start to see some things shift into that direction. As much as I like Jacksonville, you still have the Blake Bortles factor. You still have the factor of they don't have a quarterback that can go out there and win them games. So if it comes down to it, you know, what happens? So when you look at that, I think they're in the same position that they were last week, but now instead of needing 4 wins to get to 7, I think they need 3. And then I still see 3 wins on this schedule when you also consider the fact that Seattle could be in the playoffs and have it something locked up and be resting a lot of injured players or a lot of nagging injury type players, you know, Earl Thomas, Luke Jokel, Richard Sherman, all these guys are on the injury report every week. They're getting a lot of did not practices every week. So all of a sudden week 17 comes around and they've locked up the 5 seed or even the 6 seed and they can't get, you know, win the division. Does it really behoove them to play all out? Does it really matter for them? Probably not. So, you know, when you look at it, I still think this is a 7-win team. That's where I see them kind of at. But this weekend could go a long way in changing that. And this weekend, or not this weekend, but this Thursday could go a long way in changing that and making this team slightly better and giving you kind of more of the hope of, hey, maybe this team could end up being a playoff contender, because the reality is right now they're one game away from picking in the top 7 and one game in the way away from, you know, win wise being in the playoff hunt. So, you know, all of a sudden the biggest thing is stacking wins. And do we see an ability to do that on this schedule? Maybe not, but I do see 3 wins still on the schedule. And I think that, you know, I still feel really confident that this is a 7-win team, maybe much to the chagrin of a lot of fans who are like, all right, if you're only going to win 7 games, can we at least get a good draft pick? So.
Well, and that brings to the other thing is, you know, and so I don't think it's completely out of, just because Seattle, on the radio, it was described like this. Seattle's not that good a football team, but they're better than you. For some reason, that, you know, they don't play well, but they somehow find a way to win games. That being said, it wouldn't completely surprise me if the Cardinals beat them because of you know, the Adrian Peterson factor, the defense coming around factor, the fact that the Seahawks, frankly, could be missing some key players on Thursday when it comes down to it because of injuries. But this is a scenario, and this is something you asked me. We texted about the other day. What if the Cardinals get a win? What did we say about this team? And I think if they beat the Seahawks this week, I think a lot of things changes, and I think we might be seeing a mini run. You know, if they beat San Francisco, if they beat Seattle, I think you can look at the next two games in the schedule. If they beat Seattle, I think that that builds the confidence, even with Drew Stanton in there, because of the addition of Adrian Peterson and kind of the transformation of this offense and then the defense as well. I think they win their next two games and they go on a little win streak. That they're 7-4 going into that Rams game, which then becomes, depending on how the Rams keep playing, it could determine the division, whether the Rams run away with it or whether the Cardinals get back in it for the last four games. And if they beat the Rams at home, which, guess what? They're going to be very motivated to do so. The Rams are just scoring gobs of points. So say they win that. I could see them going 8-4. I see that scenario. But it starts with the win. If they win, that changes what I think about this team.
Right. And that's the thing is right now we're at a point where they haven't been over 500 since 2015. So it's hard to get excited about the idea of a three-game win streak because they haven't been over 500. So they're sitting at 4-4. A three-game win streak puts them at 6-4, and all of a sudden now we're talking about a completely different outlook on this season and on this team. But they haven't been that team for almost 2 years now. I mean, it's been since December since they look like a dominant team. And now the question becomes, you know, what do you get on a short week on a Thursday night? If they find a way to win this game, all of a sudden, I wouldn't be shocked if they were favorites in Houston because that's how bad Tom Savage is. And then you're looking at a change in expectations, not just from us, but from outside influences where now they're saying, okay, now we have to start paying attention to the Cardinals again because they're 5-4. They're second in the division. They're two games back of the Rams, basically two games back of the Rams. And tied with Seattle and technically in the lead for Seattle in second place. And, oh, by the way, they're, you know, a game or a half a game out of the wild card position in the NFC. That NFC South is going to continue to kind of destroy itself. I don't know what's going on in Atlanta, to be completely honest with you. That situation is a complete and utter disaster. So when it comes down to it, you look at it and you go, maybe this isn't as bad as we thought. We're still not to the point where you're going, oh, okay, this is a really good team. But you may get to the point where you go, okay, this team is, again, average, and they're good enough in a NFL season where average looks like it's going to be a playoff team.
Well, and here's the fun part is say that the unexpected happens and they go on this little run and they get to themselves where they can, you know, they could pull off 10 wins. But this is under the assumption, of course, that Adrian Peterson plays at an extremely high level and the defense finally lives up to its billing. Because this, let's be honest, this defense was supposed to be dominant, was it not? Based on what we saw before, based on the personnel that they have, this, what we expected coming into this season, that the defense would be great. Did we not?
We didn't expect it to be this bad.
And so if this is the transformation that's happening and that defense becomes great suddenly, or finally, so much suddenly, but finally becomes what it could be, and you have Adrian Peterson running the ball, you know, we've seen teams do this. We've seen Alex Smith-led teams do this. We've seen the Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler teams win championships like that. It's not going to be championship-y, but they can make the playoffs and win a game. And that's the thing. get to the playoffs or get to the postseason, Carson Palmer very well is probably ready to come back. And if you put Carson Palmer into that equation of great defense and Adrian Peterson, well, then you can make a little bit of noise. And so for this game this week, I know I'm kind of sounding like crazy, a little bit hyperbole with that. They could make a playoff run. No, this game determines the course of the rest of the season. While we talked about 3 weeks ago, heading into this three-game stretch, they needed to win two of those. Now, losing to the Rams kind of really hurt things because the Rams were already in control. But a win over Seattle changes the course of the season. If they lose, they're simply doing what they've done. They're continuing to be a mediocre team. They beat Seattle, and they are moving in the direction of a good team again. A good team led by a capable quarterback instead of a quarterback that can lead them to the Super Bowl or have that sort of expectation. So it'll be the case of Stanton is doing just enough.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it really boils down to is, do they extend the hope or do we go back into the, okay, this is a 7-win team. That's what we expected.
Show me Gabbert, because yeah. If we're back to the 7-seed, then people will be calling for Gabbert. As long as the defense becomes good, finally, then I think the Gabbert callers will be put at bay because they're winning football games.
Exactly. So that's the key, and I think you're right. I mean, it's not hyperbole. This game will dictate how we view the rest of the season. It's not going to dictate the outcome of the rest of the season, but it's going to dictate our expectations for the rest of the season.
And with that, we've reached the end of this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. If you haven't already found us everywhere else, you can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and on CardsWire.com. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio and Audio Boon. But if you want to always get the episodes delivered right to you, make sure you hit us up on iTunes. Subscribe. We'd love a 5-star rating. Or also on Stitcher Radio. On behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, I'm Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. And we will be back next week after the mini bye. And hopefully a Cardinals win. If not, we're going to be talking about what is next for the Arizona Cardinals. It's time to rise up and see red. Go Cardinals.